On a weekend when all of the first basemen found new homes, is Pete Alonso going to be left without the bag? Let's talk about it. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Monday, December 23rd, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. And ton of stuff to get to as far as trades and signings and everything. I want to get to all of the first basemen. I want to get to the Pete Alonso conversation. I want to talk about Patrick Sandoval, some of the moves being made. Jesus Luzardo on the move to your Phillies. But before we do that, I think we have to take a moment just to kind of acknowledge and discuss just days before his 66th birthday, the death of Ricky Henderson, Baseball Hall of Famer, MVP, 10-time All-Star, led baseball in steals a lot, right? I mean, I want to say it was like five times he led all of baseball, led the American League a bunch more. They call him Mr. Steal, or Man of Steel, for a reason. Finished with a record 1,406 stolen bases and an all-time record of 2,295 runs, which I don't quite think I realized until just this weekend. So our thoughts, obviously, Ricky Henderson's family, the Athletics, I know, have seen a memorial set up outside of the Coliseum despite not playing there anymore. It's going to be there for a while. Again, just days before his 66th birthday on Christmas Day. Actually, Ricky Henderson's a Christmas baby, just like baby Jesus. So, Troy, the big takeaway from this weekend, and we'll kind of go in chronological order starting on Friday with Christian Walker going to the Astros. But we just saw, I want to say, five different first basemen get new homes over the weekend. So Christian Walker, 3 years, $60 million to the Astros. This is a signing where when you look at the needs for this team, right, they had the advantage of, hey, we have Isaac Paredes. He can play first or third. We have flexibility. Obviously, they signed Christian Walker. Kind of feels like, well, now you've got first, now you've got third covered. Jose Altuve is at second, obviously. Alex Bregman is most assuredly now not coming back to Houston. And as much as I'm excited to see Christian Walker get a full 3 years and get legitimate money, I think he's a really good price. I thought he was the best first base option out there. Age 34, getting 3 years is kind of significant still. What does it mean for Houston to have closed the door on Bregman returning and traded away Kyle Tucker in the span of the same week?
Yeah, it's my wife actually showed me a meme earlier today. She's from Houston, so she's an Astros fan, and she showed me a meme, and it was the tweet said, "I wish we could know when we were in the good times while we were still in the good times," and it was a picture of the 2017 World Series and all the Astros celebrating on the field, and then the next picture was just Jose Altuve because he's the only one remaining from that World Series. And so but that's how they operate, really. They don't re-sign their stars, and Kyle Tucker is on a much higher level than Alex Bregman as far as offensive production in stardom. But they knew they weren't going to re-sign him already because of how exorbitant the contract would have had to been. And they were way off, about $50 million off in contract talks with Alex Bregman. And that's just a massive gap for a contract. And Alex Bregman is really wanting much more than he is worth, quote unquote worth. And so I really don't blame the Astros. I still think they did take a step back with Isak Paredes, but bringing in Christian Walker's big. They needed a first baseman, and they got one of the best defensive third base or first baseman in the sport. And now Bryce Harper can win the gold glove he rightfully deserved in 2024.
It's the anti National League thing where all the best center fielders in the National League, but now you get one of the best defensive first basemen in the American League, paving the way for Bryce Harper. I love how you always find a way to bring it back to the Phillies. I'm going to be that guy and say they absolutely, like, you went to seven straight championship series and you went to four World Series and won two of them. Like, you had to know you were in the good times when you were in the middle of that. But when I was fact checking that, I was pulling up real quick to try to fact check and see some of that. I found it interesting to kind of go through and look at, this has not been the same Astros team in the last few seasons. And this is not obviously the be all end all, right? But I'm looking on Baseball Reference at the player with the most WAR, the top player in each season, going back to the start of that streak in 2017. And it's, you know, Jose Altuve at 7.7. Alex Bregman had a 7.9 year and an 8.9 year. Carlos Correa had a 7.2 year. In the last two seasons, it's been just over 5 WAR. Kyle Tucker in 23, Yordan Alvarez in 24. And it just, it feels like, as much as it is going to be confusing for Houston fans to hear, it feels like the window is closing. Because, like you said, it feels like you downgraded a lot at a lot of these positions. You did get better at first base. Like, it's hard, it's impossible to argue that. But in the outfield, nobody you have out there is going to be better than Kyle Tucker was. Third base, like, there's questions whether Isak Paredes will be better or not than Alex Bregman. Defensively, he for sure won't. Offensively, we don't know. Pitching-wise, you're on the verge of losing Framber Valdez. He's got one more year on his deal. After you've seen so many other veterans go out the door, whether it was a Garrett Cole, Justin Verlander the first time, right? Lance McCullers still may not exist anymore, like every and it kind of feels like the window is closing, and you have to wonder, is anybody in the West, in the AL West, gonna be able to do anything to catch the Houston Astros now? Because they needed like a generational comeback and from a deep hole to win the division last season, they, like 3.5 games over Seattle with Texas being awful and things like that. Is anybody in the West going to make a push for the division, or is they just going to kind of cede it to the Astros? Kind of like some of the central divisions have just kind of been, especially in the National League, have been just ceded to the Brewers the last few years.
Yeah. And the crazy thing about their comeback in 2024 is they did most of that comeback without Kyle Tucker. So
yeah,
even though they are taking a massive step back offensively and defensively with missing Kyle Tucker for an entire season and potentially the rest of his career, that they're still the inevitable Astros. And we've talked about them, the Astros being inevitable for months now on the podcast. And it's, if anybody can do it, I mean, honestly, I think the Angels have kind of seen the writing on the wall. They're trying to make a huge push. They brought in Yusei Kikuchi, who is a pitcher that the Astros traded for at the deadline, and they turned into a sub-3 ERA guy in the 10 starts he made for them. And it's the division's definitely going to be a lot closer than it has been over the last 8 seasons in 2025 with the steps back that the Astros have taken, Jose Altuve being another year older, Lance McCullers Jr. getting blipped by Thanos. And it's maybe the Angels, the Mariners maybe, but the Mariners have even talked about trying to trade
The Mariners just refuse to do anything. They refuse to spend money. And the fact that they've built this juggernaut of a rotation, and they're discussing trading Luis Castillo just to have the money to add a bat is embarrassing. The Seattle Mariners should not be as inept as they are.
Yep.
It's like the 54% comment, like he was making a point that was a valid point, but it was taken the wrong way because their fans are pissed off that they won't do anything. I guess I'm going to go with the Rangers here. If I had to pick a non-Astros team, simply because it feels like they're at least trying to do stuff, although they made some weird moves too. And we'll get to that in the first base carousel here. If we're going chronologically here, we saw a trade. The Guardians sent Josh Naylor, final year of team control, to the Diamondbacks. They got Slade Cecione and a competitive balance round B pick. Cecione was really not good. The fastballs got... it's just really flat and gets crushed. A lot of home runs given up off of it. The draft pick may be the bigger thing here. And as a guy that you were not going to qualify an offer for Josh Naylor, you weren't going to give him $24 million next offseason. I understand trading him away, but in the short term, it just feels weird because You sign Carlos Santana toward a $12 million deal that's just about the same that Naylor would have gotten in arbitration anyway. So you didn't really get any better in 2025. And I'd argue that the age-related decline that is oncoming for Carlos Santana at some point in time is much more of an issue than it would have been, obviously, with Josh Naylor. And then speaking of age decline, Paul Goldschmidt signs a one-year, $12.5 million deal with the Yankees. So it's funny. We talk about the Dodgers having all of these former MVPs, right? And Freeman and Ohtani and Betts and Kershaw. And the Yankees are like, hey, we did that too, but it's 39-year-old Paul Goldschmidt, and it's shell of himself Cody Bellinger. it's a whole different kind of set of former MVPs. I've heard there's no such thing as a bad one-year deal, but at the end of 2025, who's going to look back and say they made the wrong decision? The Guardians for giving Carlos Santana $12 million or the Yankees for giving Paul Goldschmidt $12.5 million?
I think you got to go with the Guardians and Carlos Santana because Paul Goldschmidt, over the second half of the season, he was one of the better first basemen in baseball per OPS in the second half of the season. It was pretty close to 800. It wasn't as good as Matt Olson in the second half of the season, but he was still one of the better first basemen in the second half of the season, despite the rough stretch that he got out to. Plus, I'm looking at this Josh Naylor thing on Arizona here. He hit 31 home runs in 2024. He's moving to Arizona, which is the best park in the sport for hitting home runs. He is going to be.
Is it really?
Yes. There are.
I always assumed it was Cincinnati because it was so small, Great American Small Park. Is it really Arizona? I thought that tall wall in center.
If it's not Arizona, Arizona is one of the top three with Cincinnati and Colorado because of the humidor that they added to Arizona. It has greatly increased the scoring. A few months back,
park factors.
I looked, and Arizona's park has one of the highest average scores. Like they average generally over 10 runs a game total between each team.
Okay, so it's an offensive environment. There you go.
I haven't I haven't looked at what Josh Naylor's home runs would be if he played all 142 in Arizona, but I'm pretty sure he could get pretty close to 40 home runs, and you're adding that to if Ketel Marte can do what he did again in 2024, plus Corbin Carroll, plus they still have Eugenio Suarez who hit 30 home runs. So they have
Fun fact. Apparently, according to StatCast, for lefties, it's not a good park for homers. And Naylor's a lefty. Yeah. It is a park factor of 77. Where 100 is neutral for lefties. The lowest is Kauffman Stadium for the Royals at 68, but it is 27th out of 30 for lefties to hit homers.
Okay. So I did not look at the splits. I just did the total overall.
And I think I'm looking at just last year, just lefties. And I do think it's entirely possible if the roof is open, maybe it's different. I'm looking at every single game. If you do the roof open, it may get a lot better because of the heat and everything. Oh no, with the roof open, it's literally the worst. It's 55 with the roof open.
Wow.
Because now,
I will go ahead.
Humidor. So
yeah, I will also say their lefties last year were Corbin Carroll, who led their lefties with home runs with 22. And next was Pavin Smith with 9, and then Jake McCarthy with 8. There you go. So they didn't have many lefties hitting home runs regardless. And Corbin Carroll's not a 30 home run guy. He's a stolen base guy. But I think the Yankees are the better off out of the Yankees and the Guardians because Carlos Santana, while he has been good offensively in his career, he's always been more of a glove-first first baseman, whereas Paul Goldschmidt has been good defensively and has been good offensively throughout his career outside of the rough stretch he had in the first half of 2024. And Paul Goldschmidt was an MVP. He joins, like you said, Aaron Judge, Cody Bellinger, Giancarlo Stanton. And so I really like the fit of Paul Goldschmidt on the Yankees.
I think for me, the worry I have about Goldschmidt is both of these guys look like they could obviously decline, but I think that Santana is going to get protected against righties. Like last year, he batted 286 against lefties. He batted 219 against righties. And Goldschmidt's going to play every single day. And coming up, I mean, being 37 years old, I said 39, being 37 years old, having that slow start that he had, I don't know. Like, plus not having the advantage of the short porch, being a right-handed hitter, I don't know how good I feel about him making it work versus Santana just maintaining what he did. Although I will say, in Goldschmidt's credit, I didn't realize his second half was as good as it was. Just for context, he batted 230 in the first half. He batted 271 in the second half. 62 games, but he had less than half the strikeouts of the first half. And stole five bags too. So, like, I mean, he went from an 87 OPS to a 121 OPS first half to second half. So I didn't realize it was as good as it was. That's kind of on me there. But I still think I like the Guardian side of this simply because they'll be more aggressive about protecting him from a splits perspective. Whereas Goldschmidt batted 230 against righties last year. And I mean, maybe they use somebody to platoon with him, but I feel like they're going to want to play Paul Goldschmidt every single day. And I mean, who do you platoon with Goldschmidt? Ben Rice batted 183 against righties. You can't throw Ben Rice in there. So Santana's going to be in a better position to succeed. The question, I guess, for me is just, do you get your money's worth if he plays, you know, if he plays 90 games at first versus Goldschmidt probably playing 130? So I guess that's really kind of the issue there. The other first baseman that we saw move, Nathaniel Lowe, it's Lowe or Lowe. I never get him and Josh and Brandon correct, right? But same. Moving from the Rangers to the Nationals, he's in arbitration for left-handed reliever Robert Garcia. Is this the piece that you needed to see in Washington to now make this a legitimately like frisky lineup? You think about your outfield of James Wood, Dylan Cruz, Jacob Young being just the defensive whiz in center field and also batted like 256, better than I thought he did. Mm-hmm. Stole 30 something bags. And then your infield is CJ Abrams, Luis Garcia, Nate Lowe, and then at some point in time, hopefully early, Brady House at third. Is this a frisky Washington team? Like, could they challenge for either a wild card spot or third place in the East, or are we still 1 year out?
I think they can challenge for a wild card spot at the very least. I don't know if they'll get it this year, but I definitely think they can challenge for it. I think that adding Nathaniel in this deal today, I'm right there with you. I don't know which one he is, but adding him in this deal today, I think that puts them over the above 500. I think that makes them an above 500 team in 2025 because Ooh. They've needed a first baseman. And I love the fit of Nathaniel with the Nationals. Like you said, the outfield of James Wood, Dylan Cruz, Jacob Young, Alex Call. They still have Robert Hassel too, in waiting in the wings to come up. And so the young core that they built needed a veteran and it needed to be first base because really all of the other positions are covered. And
except for maybe third. And that's where Brady House, he was in AAA. He finished a year in AAA last year. So yeah.
And they got the veteran and the first baseman that they needed in one fell swoop with Nathaniel.
Okay. Baseball Reference says it is Lowe. Him and Josh are brothers. So yep. It's Nathaniel Lowe and Josh Lowe. And then I believe Brandon would, in that case, would be Lau, Brandon Lau. I don't think They're all Lowe. Somebody's going to correct me in the comments if I'm wrong, obviously, but I'm pretty sure Brandon would be. Yes. The note in here is the pronunciation rhymes with now. So Brandon Lau, Nathaniel Lowe, Josh Lowe. Okay. Not confusing at all because they look the exact same on the back of a jersey. Come on, guys. And speaking of other moves that happened on Sunday, we've seen some lefties move recently. We saw a signing on Friday of Patrick Sandoval for 2 years to the Red Sox. He's on the Lucas Giolito track, right? He had Tommy John. He'll miss most of the first season, play in the second. And then Jesus Luzardo went from the Marlins to your Philadelphia Phillies. Minor league catcher Paul McIntosh came along with him. And infielder Starlin Cava and then Amarian Boyd both went to Miami. Lower level prospects, Cava in particular is a promising young defender who's got some offensive questions. But Jesus Luzardo, Patrick Sandoval. Thoughts on either one of these? Are either one of these going to actually move the needle in 2025, or is health going to be the issue for both of these guys?
Well, for Patrick Sandoval, you can already say no to him just because of how much of 2025 he's going to miss. Now, if it comes down to it and they are in the Red Sox are in the thick of a playoff race down the stretch and he comes back in, say, August or something with essentially a fresh arm, then that would be huge for their rotation.
It was the internal brace. He had the injury on June 21st, so 9 to 12 month period on the internal brace. He could make it back late in the year, but I think that's more of a 26 signing than a 25. Luzardo's right. The one, really, I think that we're kind of trying to figure out here.
Yeah, Luzardo on the Phillies is a huge addition. It does make the rotation pretty lefty-heavy because they now have three lefties in their starting rotation between Ranger Suarez, Christopher Sanchez, and Jesus Luzardo. But that's really not as big of a deal as some people like to think, in my opinion, especially when the lefties are as good as the three of these are, because Jesus Luzardo is the fifth pitcher in the rotation. And when you have Jesus Luzardo as the fifth best pitcher in your rotation, you got a pretty good rotation. You can limit his innings to try and keep him healthy throughout the whole season as the fifth pitcher. Plus, Andrew Painter is going to be in the majors at some point in 2025 also. So the Phillies will probably go to a six-man rotation, which will even more limit Jesus Luzardo's innings, as well as Christopher Sanchez and Ranger Suarez, who dealt with injuries in 2024. And you're also getting Ranger Suarez in a contract year. So there's a lot of reasons to like this rotation
in 2025.
Right. And it's hands down, top to bottom, it is, if it's not the best rotation in baseball, it is the deepest rotation in baseball. And I really think somebody would have a hard time arguing against that. But the trade market as a whole has kind of been undervalued. Like, as some of the free agents this year have kind of been overvalued for some of them, but the trade market, on the other hand, has been undervalued, because it's crazy that the Phillies sent only Starlin Cabba and Amarian Boyd, who are both far from making the major leagues. The Starlin Cabba played as high as A ball, and I think Amarian Boyd played high A ball in 2024, and that's the highest either of them have reached. Neither of them are really good offensively, outside of Cabba is really good at drawing walks. He walks more than he strikes out. His eye is up there pretty close to Juan Soto levels of plate discipline, and he's also really fast and he's a really good defender, but offensively he's not been good. And that's kind of the same thing with Amarian Boyd. Cobb is a shortstop, Amarian Boyd is an outfielder, and because of his speed they're moving him to center field, or they were planning to move him to center field. We'll have to see what the Marlins do with him, but it's just crazy how really undervalued proven commodities like Kyle Tucker, Jesus Luzardo, Josh Naylor have been on the trade market so far this offseason.
Yeah, the getting Slade Cicconi, him and a draft pick for Naylor. I understand Naylor was in the final year of his deal, but like Cicconi had a 6.66 ERA in 77 innings last year. Over his career in 104 innings, he has a 6.06 across two seasons. He was worth negative 1.1 WAR. And like, I understand you can work with him, you can fix him and things like that. And the Guardians obviously are they're big on pitching development. They're one of the best organizations at it. So you have to think they have plans there. But so many of these trades, it feels like, the returns have been interesting. I'll put it that way. And you can kind of dig into some of these and see, okay, that's why this team probably wanted that guy. But it's a lot of either very young prospects that absolutely could not pan out, like this Luzardo trade, or it's very flawed major leaguers that you have to put a lot of work in to fix, like the Cicconi deal. And it's kind of surprising because we've seen so many free agents, to your point, sign for what feel like massive deals. And then some of the big names that we've heard out there for trade, like, whether it was Alec Bohm, you know, Luis Castillo, we haven't seen these trades executed. And I think in the perspective of the Phillies, they actually came out and said that they weren't really getting the interest that they wanted, the high level quality players they were wanting. So just a little surprising by some of that. don't quite know what to think of it, but it's definitely a weird dynamic and not one I was expecting to say was a lot of these trades feel pretty lopsided. There was a trade earlier in the week, and I want to say it was a catcher going to the Reds. And yep. I think it's like a kind of a backup thing to the point where it's not even listed on a lot of like free agent and trade trackers.
Right.
But it's a trade for a backup catcher. And you kind of look at it, you're like, what? Why did Cincinnati it was Jose Trevino coming to I think it's for relief pitcher Fernando Cruz.
And Alex like Cruz, Jackson.
Yeah, and like Cruz has one of the best splitters in baseball. Now he hasn't been able to figure out. That's one of the few trades when I've been like, yeah, okay, I totally see why the acquiring team wanted to get that player. But for the most part, a lot of these trades have just been weird trades outside of maybe the major leaguer for major leaguer deal when you saw Jonathan India and Joey Weimer moved for a pitcher. Other than that, a lot of the trades this year have felt weird.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, like we both said, with the free agents kind of getting bigger deals than we expected them to for the most part outside of Juan Soto, then, you know, what does that mean for Pete Alonso and all the first basemen that were off the market today?
That is kind of, I think, where I want to wrap the show with that conversation is it feels like every winter there's a guy or a few guys who are kind of left without a long-term home in the musical chairs. Is Pete Alonso going to be that guy this year? Because if you look at the teams that we said early on needed a first baseman, right? The Nationals now have one. The Yankees now have one. The Astros now have one. The Diamondbacks have replaced the one they lost with another one. If Pete Alonso doesn't go back to the Mets, do you think he gets anything more than a 1 or 2 year deal with some opt-outs? Or is there somebody that we're not thinking about that needs a first baseman and is willing to spend the money and the draft picks to give Pete Alonso a long-term deal?
I don't think he's going to get a long-term deal at this point. I think that it's kind of gotten to the point where it's along the lines of Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery from last year, where they're just holding out, and he might not sign until spring training at this point.
Get a player opt out and try to play for a year and get back in the market. Because, like, I'm going through the divisions. You look in the AL East, everybody either has a first baseman, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Blue Jays, or they're not going to spend the money, the Orioles and the Rays. You look at the Central, Guardians just got one. Royals have Vinny P. Tigers, maybe, but they're not going to give him a long-term deal and give up the draft picks. Twins need a first baseman, but they have money issues as well. White Sox are not going to give anybody a long-term deal right now. You look in the AL West, Angels have a guy. Astros just signed a guy. Athletics have Tyler Soderstrom and also probably won't give the money to Pete. Can you imagine Pete in a minor league ballpark, though? Mariners need a guy, aren't going to give the money, right? Rangers have a guy because they have Jake Berger now. NL East, Braves have a guy. Marlins won't spend the money. Mets don't have a guy, will spend the money. There's your spot. Nationals have a guy, Phillies have a guy. You go to the Central, Brewers have a guy that they might actually have to move because he's too expensive and he's like $18 million. Cardinals don't have a guy, but don't want to do the long-term commitment. Cubs have a guy. Pirates aren't going to spend the money. Reds have a guy and aren't going to spend the money. And then the West, Diamondbacks have a guy. Dodgers have a guy. Giants have a guy technically in Lamonte Wade, but probably won't want to spend the money either way. Padres, I don't think are going to spend the money. Rockies won't spend the money. So Pete Alonso's going back to the Mets, right? Like there's no other, unless he signs a 1 year deal, he's going back to the Mets, right?
Yeah, that's really the only fit for him at this point. And they're really the only team that likes him because they've dealt with him for the last 6 years.
Yeah. And so I guess now the question is, what is the deal, right? What is the term? How many years does he get? What's the dollar amount? And it kind of is Pete Alonso the guy going into this winter that you thought was going to be the last one left without a bag? Or because like I thought that somebody was going to take him and hope to get just like as a pure power play, right? I didn't know who it would be, But I thought somebody would say, let's get Pete, let's let him mash and let him get some home runs. Part of me wondered, would the Yankees sign him as retaliation for losing Soto? And obviously they went a different direction with that. The other thought I had was maybe Alex Bregman, but a third baseman is just inherently more valuable and can obviously he could play second. He offered to play second and he could always move to first if he had to. Whereas Pete's first base and DH only. Is he the guy you thought would be stuck without a bag when the offseason started?
Me personally, yes. And out of the bigger names, like barring Carlos Santana, out of the guys like Paul Goldschmidt, Pete Alonso, Christian Walker, I thought that Pete Alonso would be the last one just because of he's a one-trick pony. And he's all he's got is home run power. That's it. And then he came out last season before the All-Star game and he told Major League Baseball, because the Mets were only getting one All-Star representative, he told them, I'm not competing in the home run derby if I'm not the All-Star representative. And so he essentially took the All-Star representation from somebody else who more deserved it, because it was the worst year of his career overall. And he took it from somebody else who more deserved it, like a Mark Vientos or a Francisco.
Wasn't that the Christian Walker spot? Like, wasn't Christian Walker supposed to be, like, wasn't that part of the conversation? Was we thought Christian Walker was going to be an All-Star and he didn't get it because Pete was in there? Or am I thinking wrong and Christian Walker was in the All-Star game?
I don't remember exactly.
Christian Walker wasn't in the All-Star game. He was a Gold Glove for the third consecutive time and he was not in the All-Star game. Yeah. I think Pete got the Christian Walker first base spot.
Yeah. So he's not a good clubhouse guy as it would from that. And all he can do is hit home runs. So, I mean, the Mets are full of guys that, I mean, they are going to spend the money regardless of if they're good clubhouse guys or not. And they're the only team really that has a hole at first base and will spend the money. I think he'll get a contract closer to, if he signs with the Mets, he'll get a multi-year deal. But if it's not the Mets, I think he'd get a one-year $15, $16 million deal just because he's younger than Carlos Santana and Paul Goldschmidt.
29. But I think he'd get $20 million probably. But yeah, it'd be a shorter deal with a player option or an opt-out or something, probably like a Cody Bellinger type of structure where he could either stay or he could opt out and go to free agency if he has a great year.
Right. Yeah, but it's got to be the Mets at this point. You listed every single team, and you gave the exact reason of why they're not going to sign him. It's got to be the Mets.
Yeah, it's got to be the Mets. This has been First Pitch for Monday, December 23rd. Listen on audio. Do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell so you know when we drop the next episode. And we will have an episode on Christmas Eve, so stay tuned for that. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.